Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
She's already defying our captain's order. Don't we need to have some protection from her?
We can't hold a sentient being's life in our hands for our benefit. We have to find another way.
Commander, anyone on this ship could be a threat if they so choose. I could access any number of ways to destroy us now, yet you trust me.
I know you. I know your values, and there are disciplinary measures if you step out of line. That's what the failsafe gives us.
Discipline, not death.
Zora, I must point out that your willingness to terminate yourself runs counter to your core programming.
No, it doesn't, Doctor.
State your primary function, please.
To care for the crew of Discovery.
That's not the core programming of a ship's computer. Who gave you those parameters?
I did.
All right, should we get started here?
Should we get started here? Should we
get, I'm just asking, you know.
Excuse me.
Excuse
Can
me.
Can we get started?
Can we get started, please?
All right, Dan, start us off. Explain to the audience what's going on.
Where's Star Trek? What? Where's Star Trek?
Are you saying where's Star Trek?
No, we are Star Trek.
We are.
It's got Star Trek.
It's got, but we are Star Trek.
No, this
is it 110 episode?
It's a philosophical statement you're making. Yeah, this is episode 110.
Damn, dude.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We've been doing this show a long time.
We have. Which episode are we covering?
Season 4, episode 7, .. But to connect. Ellipsis. But to connect. My butt to
you a said cadence. Butt like it was a butt.
Yeah, like it was a butt.
Why is your cadence so weird?
You said it like it had two T's on it.
I put my butt to one of those Xbox Kinects.
Wait, what?
You know, like back in the Xbox when they had that thing, the camera that like
the motion thing.
The motion thing was called
their
the
response
Kinect.
To the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, didn't work.
It worked. It just wasn't as. You know,
well, I mean, it worked.
It didn't work.
Technically, it
on
worked.
Your butt. Yeah.
But I'm saying it didn't work to bring in the audience. People were pissed about it.
Star Trek Discovery, as it happens, it is the mid-season cliffhanger.
Yeah, that's weird.
Conclusion. They've done it once before.
What's going on with this?
Was it season two they did that, where they did a split season? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, maybe they did.
Should we mention that it's almost the New Year's?
It's almost the New Year's.
We're 8 minutes to the New Year's.
This episode will be releasing. You will be hearing this because you are dutiful fans.
Dutiful. You're full of
duty. You're listening straight away.
Dutiful.
You're not delaying. Some of you might be re-listening in the future. New audience members might be going through our future back catalog to now, mm-hmm. What is now currently the present, but will
you're
at
making
one point be the past.
Way to make it future-proof. That's what you just
exactly.
did right then.
Evergreen content. Mm-hmm. Even though we are mentioning that the context is that is a few minutes away from New Year's.
It's just metadata.
2020.
It's metadata.
2022. And it's a mid-season cliffhanger, which has got some people annoyed. I would have liked to, I mean, this is a great cliffhanger. I would have...
It just would have been nice if we got a little more warning that it was going to go down like this.
You kind of think maybe they've been shuffling some things around.
Yeah.
Or something like, oh, the coordinates are this. They don't, because they don't even get to the coordinates, really.
Yeah, they find them out.
I mean, we know what they know. We know they know what they are, but
we know
it is, but we don't. What, where is it?
Right.
I'm sorry.
It's true, and it's.
I mean, it's a proper cliffhanger.
No, it is a proper, and I was saying.
But we gotta wait.
But
we gotta wait to find out.
Who are these 10 CEOs?
Well, and it would have been okay to be a cliffhanger if we had known ahead of time that like farther ahead of time that it was going to be a cliffhanger. But as it is, it's like, yeah, exactly. we didn't expect it. We didn't get to prepare ourselves to be like, okay, we're going to wait. It's like got the last, I mean, it's not a real problem to have.
It's not
but
a big deal.
What the hell,
not
a big deal.
But it is,
it does indicate some kind of, you wonder what's going on.
Is it a production
there?
Thing? Are they shuffling it around because of the whole business with releasing Discovery, not releasing it, I should say, internationally at first and then kind of changing their minds?
Is it on Netflix internationally again?
No, it's off of Netflix, but they've put it on Pluto TV in England and I think maybe Amazon.
Just one more thing to make Discovery together. All like, and just in this like state of constant flux. It's like, okay, we're adding characters, we're losing characters.
The episodes are getting better and better.
Like, the episodes are getting better. We're changing the story this way. We're going this way. We're going this way.
Yeah.
We're going to just do this from now on.
Well, every episode,
you don't know what's going to happen.
And they keep remembering Tilly. They keep trying to like put Tilly back in the episode somehow.
She's coming back. She's got to be coming
no,
back.
I don't think she's coming back.
Tilly's coming back.
I don't think she's coming back.
No, in interviews, they said she's coming back.
Well, no. In the interviews, they said her character will not be gone, meaning... I don't think
she's gonna slide back in.
She'll be
on
back.
A trail of dream.
I think she'll be back. I don't know in what capacity.
Well,
I'm saying, correct.
But I don't think she's gonna come back on Discovery like we.
You
knew
think
her.
She's gonna be spun off into a new TV show?
Or maybe I don't know. It's not gonna be the Tilly that we're used to, which maybe, is not a bad thing necessarily.
Maybe she's
an
admiral
it'll be
now.
Like it'll be Teacher Tilly. She'll
Professor
have
Tilly.
On.
I don't know if it'll be a spinoff or what. I'm just saying, like, we're not gonna have the Tilly on the ship next to Burnham all the time anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It'll be a different
change is inevitable. Tilly.
Change doesn't have to be inevitable in certain
it
respects.
Is. It is. It's you know, the one constant in life is change.
Well, no, of course. Change is the reason that things exist. Things wouldn't exist without change. It's the main.
Damn, dude.
This motherfucker knows all about
dude.
Entropy. This guy's all up in entropy.
It's what defines movement and what defines
this podcast
like existence.
Is profound.
And time.
But change. Time. But you know, like I don't have to change my pants right now. You know what I mean? It'd be better if I waited till I got home to change my pants.
Yes. Yes.
So
it would.
You know what I mean? Change. Certain change is not inevitable.
Yeah, no, okay. I will concede.
Like a change of clothes.
I will concede this narrow point to you wholeheartedly.
I like the backhanded. This tiny little thing you said. I will concede this small meaningless aspect. I will be the bigger man and let go of what doesn't matter. And you can have that, Dan.
I'm just being.
Hey, you guys are a piece of shit, and I hate you, and you don't understand how to talk right. I'm just being honest.
I love the multitude of interpretations that the same phrases can result in a wide variety of interpretations.
It's because communication is accidental.
Yeah, I mean,
all human communication is accidental.
I mean, you can't hide behind the words you say when the intention is different. And then, speaking of which, this episode is all about intention, right? That was a segue.
I know, it's a good segue. I'm just...
You don't say, Dan.
Because you're all like, fuck you, Patrick. Oh, by the way, I'm just going to move right along.
Moving right along. Star Trek okay. Discovery.
No, it's great. We have our critiques of Discovery, but I think it's been pretty consistent this season. We've been enjoying each episode to one degree or another. And for the most part, we've been enjoying each subsequent episode better than the last. Not 100%, but, you know, there's a mixture of opinions there. However, it has been getting, quote unquote, better and better in my subjective viewpoint. And one example is
I agree
this,
with that.
This is a... And again, I feel like I'm just, you know, harping on the same harp, harping on
yeah,
the,
don't do that.
Cording on the same bone. What's the phrase? Am I making that up? I'm coining the phrase. Cording on the same
what
bone.
What was it? Something on the bone?
Yes, I'm harping on the corded on the corded.
On the corded bone. Yeah, I'm harping on the corded bone
by saying that they have.
Harping on the corded bone.
Trust me, it makes sense.
Decipher that.
Don't
one.
Listen back. Don't, you don't need
parse
to
that sentence.
You don't need to rewrite. It'll all be clear in a second.
2 minutes till New Year's.
Classic. It's classic Star Trek style, updated and presented in a different format. But this is a talking episode. This is just a bunch of people fucking talking to each other.
Oh yeah,
and totally. Talking out a problem. All the action is the camera slowly panning around from people who are talking.
Yeah,
to each other.
Right. Yeah, that was a little weird. That sort of montage between Burnham and Stamets at the
end. I found that inelegant.
Yeah,
that was the one thing in this episode.
It was trying to be. It was trying to be elegant, but I think it came off a little clunky.
I can see from a production standpoint that they filmed all this stuff. And I could see how if both of those speeches were isolated and not blended together, mm-hmm. I could see there could be some pacing issues or pacing concerns about that. However, I think their solution was somewhat inelegant. I think it blunted the impact of both of those speeches somewhat, even though they were trying to make a comparison between them.
And in a way there was, because General Ndoye says, you know, intent doesn't matter, actions do. Mm. And that cuts to the scene where Saru is telling Kovach that Zora means well, which is another form of saying intent. And then Kovach is the one that says, like, we always mean well to ourselves. The problem is what that means for others. So Saru is saying intent matters. Ndoye is saying intent doesn't matter. Tarina is also saying intent matters, and I mean, Kovach is kind of, he's not really saying any of that, he's just being that wise sort of third party guy. But the point being is, like, they both those scenes were talking about how do intentions matter, what, or is it just the action that matters, you know?
And fundamentally, what's been good about this season, I think an improvement over prior seasons, including the third season, which I thought already had a number of improvements in the storytelling, is that they've got this whole story with the DMA and all this other stuff, as we've discussed in previous episodes this season, that's sort of in the background propelling
things.
It's
New Year's.
Oh, happy New Year,
everybody. It's 2022. Oh,
2022. Shit. I have 11:50. Oh, now it's 12.
I've got 0000.
All right.
Okay.
Everyone, now, cheers, you know, hootin' holler and all
January
that.
Foist.
Let's kick some New Year booty.
January foist.
Booty.
However, there is a subtle difference in the storytelling between this season and previous seasons, in that the underlying plot is a framework upon which to have these character interactions and ask these philosophical questions. That's more old school style Star Trek. Oh, I don't know if you can hear that in the audience, but there's some loud ass fireworks going on out there.
Somebody like shot a gun.
Yeah, that was a boomer.
I guess it's New Year's. However, in previous seasons of Discovery, often it was including the third season, it was the plot that was the focus, right? So the burn, the mystery of the burn, all that stuff. Yes, they had lots of character stuff going on, and that's great. We learned a lot about the characters, and the burn mystery gave an opportunity to play around with these characters. However, the from an audience perspective, it was all about what's the burn, who's the burn, like who's causing the burn, what's the whole situation, what's the whole deal with the 32nd century, you know, all that stuff. That was the focus, less on the characters.
Now why is everybody so pissed off?
Now it's reversed, in that you have this situation with the DMA, but it's a super simple thing. It's a super simple, there is a mystery to it.
It's a standard anomaly.
But what we're getting to see is we're getting to see how these characters react to it. And in this episode, all of that was leading up to, you know, we've seen hints of this this growing separation between Book and Burnham in terms of their philosophical
Cleveland Booker.
Yeah, their philosophical perspective on how to approach things. And now we see them directly acting against each other. And the scene at the end where Burnham very reluctantly gives the speech that we're led to believe convinced enough people to go the peaceful route.
And Rilik was doing that thing where she's like, does anyone else have anything to say? And then she like stares right at Burnham. Yeah. I hate when people do that.
Well, President Weird Face.
It's just like, it's like, I know you're staring at me because you want me to react. Then stop it. It makes me not want to react to you.
She's the worst.
Especially in this context, I mean, I don't mind President Rilik, but
I don't mind her, but hate when people do that.
Well, she's manipulative, but
she's a politician.
She's sort of openly manipulative with Burnham, right? But Burnham having to make that decision on the fly to be like, do I do what's right or do I protect my relationship? Because she knows by speaking out, she knows that she's fucking everything up at that point. She doesn't know that her partner is going to turn into potentially, I don't know, terrorist or whatever the right term is.
Rogue.
A rogue, I think, is better.
He went rogue with that Tarka.
Yeah. So who's been manipulating him the whole time, right?
Well,
I really appreciate that the story was able to set up a scene like that, and a number of other scenes in this episode as well. But those are all, it's based off of character information that we've gotten, not based off of who cares about the DMA. We learn a couple things each episode about the DMA that are barely anything.
Yeah. Right? But we don't need to know that much.
Exactly.
Really,
we don't need to, because that's not the focus.
But So Book is like
Cleveland Booker.
Cleveland Booker. So there can be some parallels.
Cleveland Booker
there
the
can
third.
Be, there can be some like light parallels drawn between Booker and Stamets in this episode.
What about audio parallels? Because you said light parallels.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I said
you're that. Okay, you're just angry at me. I wasn't sure what that face was. I wasn't sure if you were confused or just, you know, stamping down, like tamping down some rage.
Are you finished?
Pretty much.
You finished?
Happy New Year.
When you said stamping down some rage, you put your hand over your crotch as if you were like putting my rage in
your
crotch.
I mean it's near the crotch, but it, you know, it's just it's a quirk of how I'm sitting.
Mm-hmm. Like when your pants, like that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where they thought
the pants tense.
Yeah, that they thought Larry.
That's like the first episode.
Larry, I keep saying when I say Larry Bird.
Larry Bird.
Larry David has. They think he has an erection. Anyway.
Well, that's a classic pants. That's why you don't want to wear slacks. You know, pleated slacks.
Nobody wears pleated slacks anymore.
I know. That's why.
It also just makes your hips look funny.
So. Yeah, so we're booked. Yeah, because guys really need to have their hips look all big like that. Right. You know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know, depends what you're trying to do, Dan.
I guess it depends on what you're trying to do.
You're trying to go for.
I'm sorry, I made a poor generalization. I apologize. I'm trying to get better.
All right.
So Stamets is skeptical of Zora, right? Book is obviously skeptical of, you know, the plan of action they're taking. So they both have this thing where they're kind of afraid of the outcome of what's going to happen. Now, Book is more emotionally charged and Book ends up sort of going with it. Whereas Stamets kind of, he seems like he represents our general fears of things that we have about stuff. But what's nice about what Stamets does is he knows it's uncomfortable. Yeah. and he's scared, but he's willing to work on that. And that's the problem, is a lot of times we'll be scared of something. We'll have a fear of something and we'll just indulge in our fear. Yeah. Right. And we won't. And because it's hard, it feels unnatural to try to like overcome that fear. It feels like, no, that's bad. It's unnatural. But Stamets represents like fear, rational and maybe irrational in some ways. I don't know. But the point is that he sees that and he's trying to better himself.
There's been a lot of great character development over the seasons with Stamets, because, you know, we were introduced to him. He was really quite, you know, tightly wound, bratty, almost obnoxious, arrogant. And some of that's been tamped out. But
come to think of it, his fears do all make, he makes good points.
They've
actually
been doing a really great job with making the different perspectives reasonable, right? Even if you as the audience might agree more with one argument or another, they're reasonable. And with Stamets, getting to your point, Dan, that I think is wonderful, is yet he's at the same time confident in saying he disagrees, that he has this concern. At the same time, he freely admits, he's like saying, like, I might be wrong because like none of you all are freaked out. Adira isn't, Gray isn't, Culber.
I mean,
other people are not as freaked out. And so he's saying, I'm seeing that you're not freaked out and I respect you. So I'm willing to examine why, like, maybe I'm totally wrong about being freaked out.
And he even says at the beginning that he's terrified. And we know it's very sort of like, it's a topical, you know, sort of idea of this. That's always kind of an issue, but you know, you can think of certain aspects of how things go in life, right? Where a group of people are terrified of something, and instead of trying to like understand that terror or whatever, they simply say, oh no, we need to protect ourselves, and that we need to protect ourselves at all cost. And instead of like trying to understand, they base their actions more on the fear, and they're indulging in that fear and saying like, no, what if they get us? What if they get us? What if they get us? And that's so that's the part where it could have gone either way. When he said he was terrified, he could have gone the way of saying like, oh, we need to protect ourselves because I'm scared. Instead, he admits that he's terrified. And that's a natural thing to feel. It's not bad to be scared, but like it's the way you sort of manage that. Yes. And like you said, he saw that other people were being, you know, had a different perspective. And so he was one of
them.
Book is kind of like he's not there yet or something. I don't know.
His planet got blown up.
Yeah, he's got a lot more emotion behind it. That's sure. His book's got a lot more to overcome. Sorry, Jesse.
Oh, I liked it when he calls Burnham down to engineering when they have the problem when Zora doesn't want to give up the coordinates. But I mean, he doesn't say, he's just like calling Captain Burnham down to engineering. But he's got like that whole tone in his voice. It's like this annoying.
Yeah,
he's like worried and annoyed because it's like he's trying to do something and there's like this hang up. And he's got this annoyance.
Like
I'm just trying to do this. Like he always has, he either has this like enthusiasm about like, oh my God, this amazing thing's about to happen. Or it's like, this amazing thing is, I'm trying to get this amazing thing to happen.
He's all frustrated.
It's all fucking frustrating.
And I actually, that's when Zora like first refuses it, when Burnham's around and Stamets is there, he has this perfect look of annoyance on his face.
It's just great Stamets. Like you're always getting like 100% Stamets from this guy.
It's great to,
this is great. The greatest character.
Like. Do a screen, like screen shot by shot.
Screenshot by shot.
Well,
screen cap.
I will get the screen caps, and so I get to do this a lot.
Frame by frame.
Sorry,
get the
folks.
Boo, goo, goo, boo.
Sorry, folks. It is New Year's, and we have been celebrating.
We are drunk on 2021, soon to be hungover by it.
Yeah. You're not.
On 2021. I'm on the concept of the year, not the booze within the
concept
the
of time, the entropy,
zeitgeist.
Yeah. But frame by frame, some of the best expressions are from Stamets. Mm-hmm. In fact, 100% of the best expressions are from Stamets. A couple of them from Saru. Everyone else, they've got some great expressions, but Stamets has always got that perfect, right in the middle of, like you said, frustration, elation, brattiness, sympathy. He can do it all.
Because you got Cleveland Booker, he's always making a sad face. President Weird Face is always making some weird
face. Weird Face.
Are you just trying not to say use the racial slur Spoonhead?
No, she's hard. She's not that spoony at all. she just makes weird faces when she
politician faces.
It's not because she's part alien. She's just making strange faces.
Did you notice she didn't vote? Why didn't she vote?
Well, she's the president.
But the president doesn't get a vote.
Everyone votes.
She's running the meeting, and she stated to Burnham, she stated clearly, because Burnham was like, why don't you say it? And she's like, I got to be neutral because otherwise this whole federation is not going
to work. I understand that she can't try to convince people one way or the other, but at the same time, like, even presidents vote on stuff.
Yeah, it's a different setup.
It's a legislative process. The president is the executive.
And are you sure the Starfleet Federation works like that?
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
But I think, Dan, we're meant to understand in this context that this is specific to this political context that she's finding herself in, which is tenuous. A tenuous, smaller federation.
Tenuous at best.
Being cobbled back together.
They don't even have Earth. Earth is run by some like angry people.
You it's get like some you, of those older Federation presidents back angry, in the TNG days. British maybe they'll people. Be more. They would be more assertive.
So it's United Earth, which is Earth
plus
and
Titan.
And plus Titan.
And Titan.
So Earth and Titan, and they're skeptical about joining the Federation.
Ganymede is all off on their own.
Because Earth.
What about Io?
And Io.
Mm. Yeah. And Enceladus.
So many moons.
So many moons.
Europa.
No.
Europides, not so.
I was listening to some. I love
It's even better when it doesn't quite work.
Cassini these nuts.
I was listening. I had some like a London progressive house CD. It was actually pretty badass.
Word. Yeah, and it sounds badass.
One of the songs was all called something about Europa. And so it was like, it was really like electronic-y, you know, that kind of style about, you know.
Yeah.
Did they have a song about Deimos?
I know what you're talking about.
I didn't hear one about Deimos.
All right. I was just checking.
That's something you would do. So they had the voting. Tarka. We find out that Tarka is not completely two-dimensional. Although,
is his story for real?
Oh, you think he's full of shit?
He's every scene we've seen him in before, he's been played as being manipulative. I'm not suggesting he's straight up lying. I think they're... We don't know enough about this backstory he's provided.
Yeah, but
these hints of backstory. You're,
okay, that's a good point. But if his story is true, it's still like a completely selfish reason.
Oh, 100%.
To like, you know, he says, oh, you know, let's not risk lives. We got to get this before we kill more lives. But he doesn't actually care about that. If his story is correct, he cares about going home, which... His action may be causing more deaths than it's saving, which we already kind of are arguing about, but he might even know that himself. Point is...
He couldn't care less.
Yeah, he's...
Whether it works out or not, if he can get at that power source that lets him, you know, travel through dimensions.
He's willing to, like, wreck up, like, space itself in order to get back to his home, and he's sympathetic in a way, but he's completely lost perspective. That is, if he's telling the truth about what he's seeing.
It's just, it's hard to tell with this guy. It's hard to tell with this Tarka fella.
Booker said the word, I like gutted. I like that term, gutted.
Yeah.
When it's referred to as like,
because you feel bad as opposed to like gutting a fish.
Good citizens aren't worried about finding their moment and aren't gutted at the idea of losing it. Mm. I had a person helping me recruit. I guess a recruiter or whatever. Anyway, I was looking for a job, and the person I was working with, she was from England, and she was kept talking about like, you know, oh, there was some interview I didn't want to go to, and they're like, oh, they'll be gutted if you don't go or something. Mm. So I don't know.
Did you talk about lorries?
The lorries. I was going to say that.
Did she put something in the boot of her car?
No.
She throw it in the bin.
What pants are?
Toss it in
pants,
the bin.
Pants or underwear?
Or underwear. What are
trousers? Like,
trousers. Yeah, right. Trousers or slacks or pants. Yeah.
And we all know what fanny means.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fannies. Yeah, that's where it's at, man. Fannies.
Happy New Year.
I'd say that fanny would be a weird word to name someone in England because of what it means, but we also had the name Dick for a long time.
We still have the name
Dick. We still have the name Dick. But it's going
short for Richard.
Yeah, I know, but it's going out of style. It's going out of fashion.
You think it's going out of style?
There's much fewer dicks now than there were back then. So why do we think that Tarka's... So I didn't even think that he would be lying, honestly.
I don't know that he's lying. It's,
but do you think he was telling the truth when he's talking about being held captive by the Emerald Chain or whatever?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
I think all that's true. I think it's
because he's got that thing on the back.
But maybe
he
put that on the back of his neck to trick to get book sympathy or something.
That is possible.
Because he's from the Mirror Universe.
I wouldn't be surprised. Well,
no, he said there's not just the Mirror. He pointed out the fact
or
that.
Or there's an even shadier.
Which we know that from like TNG's Parallels and all sorts of other. We know there's more than the Mirror Universe.
Absolutely.
But, the
just from basic physics.
Yeah. Basic physics about multi-universe elementary
science.
My deal with Tarka is that the best manipulators, the best obfuscators of the truth, often rely on the truth in order to obfuscate.
Yes,
obfuscate. Right?
That's the easiest way to be consistent. It's the easiest way to have authenticity, and you don't even need to. Prevaricate. You don't need to completely imagine or create total lies or exaggerations. You can omit stuff. And I think a lot of what's happening with Tarka is he's omitting information. He didn't tell any of this information to Book or anyone else that we could see beforehand. Mm-hmm. And he could have gone to the Federation and say like, I'd like to go here and, you know, it'll benefit other people. Who knows? There might've been some other options than what he's doing right now. Maybe not, but, he's ladling out information, true or false, whatever it is, in a very specific way at the moment that is going to provide him the most benefit.
Mm-hmm. He keeps talking about finding his moment. Which meant literally zapping in at the time during the speech, but also meant like, you know, that sort of like how you just said, how he's revealing things over time.
I like the idea of people abusing the instant transport feature, like the personal transporters. Right.
Yeah, that's like a violation of like parliamentary procedure. Like he was in the audience and he all like busted in.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the time to, you know.
Yeah, but Book was a Melai Z. Which is Melai Ji?
Well, he was
speaker for the dead. I looked that up online, and there's nothing about Melai Ji, but
not even on a Memory Alpha.
No, there's no. I looked a few of these things up about this episode, and there was several things that weren't in.
Several things
like Melai Ji wasn't in there. There was one that meant something.
Melba toast. Is that a thing? Melba toast?
It is a thing.
Although, Melba toast? Like, there wasn't anything about Garathian and Star Trek in this episode or Star Trek in general, but Garathian is, like, I remember as a kid, I used to read these books, the Dragonlance fantasy series.
Yes.
It was like fantasy stuff, you know, and they were fun.
I know about that.
Yeah, they're fun. And but there was Garathians as a fire dragon in those. They're also in World of Warcraft. So Garathian Grenadier is in some kind of game Colts.
Garathian Grenadine.
Colts 3D? I don't know what that is.
Denobulan Bloodmark.
But anyway, so Garathian is a pre-existing term, but not in Star Trek. And they don't even have anything up on the website yet. Or on the website. Google.
On the Google.
The website.
On the internet.
on the internet with a capital I.
But so Melai Ji or whatever, he's a speaker for the dead. I thought it was weird. So he gave that speech, right? And I know that Tarka initiated the clapping, but everyone started clapping along with him. And everyone went along with it like Book said something really profound. I mean, what he said was from the heart, and I appreciate it, and it wasn't bad. It was a good thing. Like, I thought it was solid what he was saying. Yeah. I just thought the audience reaction was a little silly.
Part of it may be demonstrating the point that people are easily swayed by words, and this is a very political situation, and I agree with you, Jesse, that under normal circumstances, you wouldn't expect either Tarka or Book to just be able to like barge in and speak their mind. However, again, in a political scenario, Tarka is famous for being super genius, super smart, helping out. You know, he's already been assigned to a lot of stuff, so he's known. It would be hard to shut him down. People would get suspicious, right? You have to think from the perspective of President Rylik, right? And similar thing with Book. His planet got all poofed up by this thing. He's rightly or wrongly, from an emotional standpoint, it's difficult to not listen to him talk, and difficult not to be swayed by him. It helps that we have just such great acting with David Ahala and everybody. I mean, all these actors are just fantastic at their job.
Is that how you say that guy's name?
I believe so.
Like Hala bread?
Yeah.
It's spelled like Ajala.
Yeah,
no, it's could spelled be differently.
Then Burnham comes in and she speaks her mind and does also a very good job. And is also able to sway people to her side. Now, I do think that the show is meaning for the audience to primarily side with Burnham's side. Book's side is meant to be
old Federation,
an understandable perspective, but not necessarily the correct one.
Right.
Especially, I think the strongest argument Burnham made was, how the fuck do you don't know that, like, we do this and then they get mad at us and just send a thousand of these motherfuckers
our way,
right?
I like the line where she says, if we detonate this weapon, we cannot control the message we're sending.
Yes.
I thought that was a really interesting way of wording that.
It's great. They've been reading some foreign policy books. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with more Star Trek Discovery. Season 4, Episode 7. Okay, now we're back. Back to the discussion.
That was a nice break we had.
Previously, we were on break.
I got so much done during
Now we're
break.
Back discussing Star Trek Discovery.
I ate a whole turnip on break.
Yeah. A whole turnip?
A whole turnip.
A Denobulan turnip.
Turn it up.
Not like a Denobulan power worm or whatever the world.
Blood worm.
Make me think
Denobulan
of
Denobulan blood worm.
Nintendo power glove.
Nintendo power. Get the clues that you can use. Nintendo power. Fighting in fire, running away through enemy fire. So he's talking about.
I had to finish it.
And Tarka is like, he's got that sort of that arrogant confidence that you'd expect from someone who's actually insecure, but I don't think he is insecure because
he goes beyond it. He's confident and not insecure. It's like he believes in him and he buys his own business.
Right. Right. So he was talking about, you know, when he warped up on stage, teleported up on stage, he goes, you know, one people's like, you fired 1600 quantum torpedoes. Wow. And the other people, they, you know, countless probes, who care? You know, that's fine. That's a reasonable thing to do. Then there was one talking about how much latinum have you liquidated to solve how to get a ship inside. I didn't quite know. I thought it was a cool thing to say. I just don't know what latinum has to do with it. But
they're paying people
expenditure.
Yeah,
on resources, and you got to pay for the graduate students.
Yeah, the graduate students it's the contractors.
It's a flashy alliteration. Yeah. Liquidate latinum.
So just remind us that latinum exists. Yeah, but then he goes, every one of you has washed out. Every one of you have washed out. Why? Because, speaking frankly, you're not me, and you don't have this. And when someone says, like, you're not me, it's so obviously over the top. You're like either like, haha, A, you're making a joke, or B, you're super insecure, you know? But he's not. He's not me.
The third option, which is he's saying it, and he's saying it because he knows in the context it will help his cause. He's saying, yeah, I'm an asshole. You can think I'm an asshole all you want. I couldn't care less that you think I'm an asshole because I actually can, I have this. I can do something.
Because he's already made the spore drive.
Yeah. It's like, you motherfuckers, you're nice, but you're not fucking getting anywhere. Yeah. So,
I get his form of diplomacy involves like him admitting that he's a jerk, but he knows what's going on. But that he's a little over the top there. But
he is a little over the top.
But you know, that's cool.
So
he's from Ryza.
We should address at this point readdress this issue of the lack of the Klingons, because it continues to become more acute. Because
they mentioned the Khitomer Accords, but they didn't mention the Klingons.
Well, Burnham mentions the Klingons, but in the context of referencing her past,
right?
Not a contemporary contemporaneous Klingon.
But nobody says anything to follow it up about, oh yeah, the Klingons, you know what happened to them. Yeah.
Well, there's one part where I guess Book is talking to Burnham.
Yeah, that's when Burnham mentions it in the context of saying, Book is like, I'm doing the same thing you did with the Klingons. Yeah. She's like, no, we knew the Klingons. This is not some unknown thing like we're dealing with now. So it's in
relation to jumping into action, whereas Book wants to jump into action and then I guess
it also didn't work out for Burnham.
And Burnham wanted to jump into action with the Klingons, and so Book's like, "Well, you did that with the Klingons. Why not here?" And she knew their culture, and
it super didn't work.
It didn't work.
We disagree with the conclusion that for some reason they've made in the show that it was Burnham's fault that the Klingons wanted to start that war.
Yeah, right.
We've talked about that before.
Wanted to explore some kind of probe or something, and right? Yeah. I can't even remember. She wanted to explore a probe, and somehow that resulted in the series of events that happened that somehow was her fault. Yeah.
I guess I won't
look at probes anymore, even though we're, supposed to be figuring this shit out.
Look at that probe.
Look at that probe. No Klingons.
So they haven't mentioned Klingons since the beginning of season 3. There may have been an oblique reference to a Klingon space or something on one of the maps they showed, but we haven't really gotten a clear mention of Klingons. Season 4, the absence has become even more acute because they are bringing together people, right? Some people are being brought together to rejoin the Federation. Others are just brought here to discuss this thing.
They have Romulans, but they've got Klingons.
Yeah, they've got Zindi insectoids. There's Zindi insectoids.
They got fucking Zindi.
When you look at the
they're talking about the board.
You got the vote. You know the voting part, and they put up all the symbols of who voted yes and who voted no for peace. When you look at that on Twitter, you can find some high res versions of that. I think one of the illustrators who works for the show, one of the production people, actually put like real high res versions of it. There you see Zindi, you see Nivaran, you see Cardassian, you see Ferengi, you see Andorian, you see UFP, United Federation of Planets. You see races that we hadn't heard of before. You see the butterfly people.
Yeah.
No Klingon symbol on there. And that's a very recognizable symbol. So there's like no Klingon symbol.
Yeah, I mean,
there. So where are they?
Right.
They're not even having a vote.
What are you talking about?
Well, so. Okay.
What are you talking about?
They're not talking about it.
What are you talking about?
It's to the point where either they're purposefully not mentioning the Klingons so they can have some big reveal, or they're just so freaked out by the reaction to their initial Klingons from the first and second season that they just they don't want to touch it anymore.
No.
Yeah. I don't know which it is, honestly.
We're not going back to those.
Maybe
guys.
A little of both.
Yeah.
But part of me is hoping that maybe even by the end of this season, to me it seems like it's they've gone out of their way to not reference the Klingons.
I mean, it's fucking Star Trek.
They're mentioning, like you said, they're mentioning the Khitomer Accords, they're mentioning Denobian bloodworms, they're mentioning the fucking Baku from
fucking
Star Trek.
Baku!
From Star Trek Insurrection. They've mentioned
the Baku!
They've mentioned the Baku twice. I think in two episodes, I think they mentioned the Baku in the previous one in reference to what a name means. Zora was talking about that, and then I think there was...
That's right.
Yeah. But the point is they're referencing obscure... folks,
Kalish be damned.
Kalish.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They're maybe it's because they, because there's no way to work Shahzad Latif back into the thing because he's awesome. And
Is he not? Is he not specifically uninvolved on purpose or something?
Well, no, because he didn't travel forward to the future.
Them,
right? He's back in the 2200s.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
He's working
Dan?
For the Federation.
What were you even thinking?
Crazy? They should do a thing where they do now, like where they're in the future, but then they should cut back to the past while the future's happening and show actions that he's taking back. Actions that he's taking back then and how it affects the future. You know what I'm saying? So
future.
So in Discovery in the future, they'll discover some weird rock on the ship. They'll be like, "Where did this rock come from?" And then it'll cut back to
Clem Fandango.
What's his name?
Clem Fandango.
Clem Shazad Latif?
Yeah, it'll come back to a scene where he's like, I'm going to put this rock here and see what happens. And then it'll cut back to the future. They'll be like, I found the rock. You see what I'm saying? Like, cutting back 900
I
years.
I found Clem Fandango's rock.
You know, cutting back between.
I can hear you.
You know how they, you know, like.
I can hear you through time and space.
You know, it's like in like 900 years. In, you know,
Jackie Daytona.
In the original time, in the original time frame, they'll show someone like doing like. They'll kick a hole in the wall and then they'll jump to the future and they'll be like, where did this hole come from? And they'll be like, 930 years ago, this person, you know what I'm saying? They could do that.
Yeah.
How the past affects the future.
How the past affects the future.
They should totally do that. That's something they should do.
Yeah, they could do that.
That's what people do.
I'm not arguing with you on this point, Dave. I fully agree with you.
That's something they could do.
Maybe I know what you're saying.
That'll be the overarching
do you know what
arc,
I'm saying?
The arc for season five. That's what that will be, yeah?
Then they could do Klingons.
Klingons.
Yeah.
Klingon battle mode. All right. So that's the Klingon. I just want to make sure we mention the Klingon because it's getting more and more overt. Now we got to wait until a number of weeks before we can find out if there's any resolution to that or not.
Yeah. You know, someone Tarka was talking about collateral damage because Burnham was talking about, well, maybe it'll go back and zap them. We don't want that. And he's like, collateral damage. Rilek looked at him like, what the fuck?
She was like, Jesus.
Yeah, that was a pretty good look. That was one
of her weird faces.
Yeah, that was a solid what the fuck face.
Well, Rilek is interesting because she's one of those characters where she's got these people around her, these tools. She views these people as tools in a sense, right? Yeah. Burnham included. She's been straight up with Burnham saying, hey, look, I'm not going to put you on the fucking Voyager, heading up some important experiments. And you might take offense at that, even though you say you don't want it. But like, what I'm really telling you is like, you're not good for that. That's not what you're useful. Your style is useful for these things. And I'm going to use you for those things. And she's pretty overt about it. Even here, it's subtle, but even here, when she did it here and she did it when the Navarre was rejoining the Federation a few episodes back, where she just straight up goes to Burnham and is like, I don't know. It'd be, kind of great if somebody solved this problem. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna turn my back and walk over this way. But I'm just saying, you know, it'd be really fucking great. Somebody just piped up here. Her relationship with Burnham has improved, so she's being a little bit more upfront here. Now she's explaining to Burnham why she can't do it and encouraging her to do it. So it's a little less overtly manipulative, but I'd say it still falls under that category of she's using her tools. And when she looks at Tarka that way, Tarka is one of her tools. He's her little genius boy who's going to get her the new spore drive and whatever else she might need, right? But she's aggravated because she's like, God damn it, this guy's a piece of shit. He's going to fuck up my shit. It's good storytelling, I think. Good storytelling with that particular character.
When Burnham was talking about, you know, the bloodworms and their intent and caterpillars.
Bloodworms.
Caterpillars.
The Denobulan bloodworms?
Yeah, they're talking about caterpillars devouring entire crops. And she was like, we do not ascribe malice to either species. That's something I could totally picture Picard saying, you know, like something like that, you know.
Picard
would totally say something like that.
Yeah. Sipping on some tea.
Classic Star Trek.
Looking at Beverly Crusher nudes.
Yeah.
I know. Right?
Do you think he ever makes
fake nudes? He knows they're fake, but you know.
Got them on a BBS somewhere.
Yeah, he got to download them on a 2400 baud modem.
Do you ever think he makes some hot toddy out of his Earl Grey?
Oh yeah, he's always putting whiskey.
Definitely. In.
That's what they don't talk about.
Yeah, sometimes he's got a whiskey.
There's been
a couple of episodes where he's got a whiskey.
When he drank with Scotty, you knew he could handle his shit.
His family owns a winery, but you never see him drinking wine.
No,
he's always drinking tea or some sort of brown liquor.
Because he's Patrick Stewart.
So
that guy ain't French.
So they're talking about this episode is intention does matter, and that goes. We can talk. You know, I don't know if you want to move to talk about the whole
philosophical
Zora thing.
We do need to talk about Zora, but I think it's good to talk about the argument about intention again. The way it's presented, it's strongly biased or in favor of the conclusion that I certainly agree with. I agree with Burnham and the people who voted with her that approach is, it's both the more Star Trek approach. She refers to it, you know, Federation Starfleet style, but from our meta perspective, it's the Star Trek way to do things. But also, again, reiterating that she's right. You blow this thing up, you might fuck them up, or you might make them realize we're more of a threat than they thought. And
or catapult a toxic void across the galaxy.
Yeah, they could fuck us up. So that's just a practical reason not to do it. Morally, she makes the strong moral argument that we have no idea what's going on. So we can't just assume ill intent because it could be some mix up or some confusion or they don't have enough scan. Who knows?
It usually is.
And they're talking about this thing coming from outside the galaxy. Maybe this is an extragalactic civilization that's trying to communicate with the Milky Way galaxy. Maybe they're trying to find a spot to have a wormhole that they could travel in between.
It's from the Reese's galaxy or the Snickers
I could
galaxy.
See from a storytelling perspective, I could see the value both in the conclusion being that this is not a hostile force. It's not intended to be. I'm almost certain that that's where they will go with this. And secondarily, they're straight up saying there's, you know, this comes from outside the galaxy. I think it would be a genius move for them now that they've gone into the future. That's crossing one previous threshold of the final frontier, traveling through time. If they can open up travel between galaxies and then move.
They've
it,
also been in the mirror universe.
That would be because that's the next step for Star Trek, right? Is all of Star Trek up till now has been exploring our little corner of the galaxy and then the Gamma Quadrant in Deep Space Nine, Delta Quadrant in Voyager. So we've been expanding out. Now we're in the future. Things have changed up a little bit. If they could also make it so that you can interact with other galaxies, imagine all the crazy sci-fi stuff you could do. And political stuff and sciencey stuff. It depends on who you get writing those stories, of course, but I think that it would be a fertile ground for Star Trek to move into that direction.
I like how you made a suggestion and then declared it would be genius if they followed your suggestion.
Yeah, I think that my suggestion is genius.
What if the other galaxy was the Star Wars?
I like that you observed that. That's well observed.
It wasn't that far away or that far away.
Are you trying to get me on your side now so we can team up and you can convince me to do research that's dangerous because you call me a genius?
What are these noises?
I don't know.
It's like a beaver in here.
Yes. Yes, I'm trying to manipulate you to be on my side as I proceed with reckless action.
Yeah. So back to your point about intention. Back to the point about intention.
That's not my point. That's your
point. Well, it wasn't my point. It was just
your point. Your observation. Well, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, no. Results versus intention, right? And that's kind of like the whole idea of the ends justify the means. Of course, intention matters, but it's really the scope of it. Like, what do we count as ends? Is a battle an end? Is the war an end? You know what I mean? Like, because you could say, well, the actions matter. The actions of them, like, fucking our shit up. A bunch of people died. That's the end. That's the action. It doesn't care what their intentions are. This is what they did. It was bad. It was fucked up. We should come back and attack. But the intentions do obviously matter in that situation, because if they didn't mean any harm, maybe you can work with them and maybe you guys can work together. Yeah. And those ends, suddenly you have a new set of ends, right. You know, and right. those and that new set of ends was determined because you cared about the intention, you know,
well, especially
the means, you know,
if your goal is right. And I think this is where Burnham's argument wins out. And the Vulcan guy, I like that move they did where the Vulcan guy started talking, or the Navarin, I should say, the Navarin guy started talking, and it just sort of fades out. You know, he's just like droning on about something. But he was kind of getting at this point too, which is that if your goal is to extinguish this threat, here's a hitherto unknown, unprecedented threat, difficult to deal with, super complicated. We might have a solution to end the immediate threat, possibly. We're not 100% sure, but possibly. But if your goal is to end the threat entirely, then it makes sense to want to at least try to reach out to these folks and communicate with them. If you know, find out exactly what the deal is is it a conscious entity? Is it a group of people or aliens or whatever it is? Do they have a specific mission? Does it turn out that they had a specific mission, but something went awry on their end and it was all an accident? Is it that they are not, they just don't realize what they're doing. They just can't comprehend it because they're so alien. There's a number of reasons why. And if you're trying to end it, then communicating with those people, at least making the attempt, is your best chance to actually like solve the problem in a more permanent way.
Right.
And there are all these other risks. And variations on this debate have gone on throughout history in terms of, should we attack first, or should we attack here, or should we not attack, or should we shore up for, these are difficult decisions to make, but often if, you know, is in, particularly in the context of Star Trek, it's about how are we going to solve this problem? We're going to solve it through some form of communication. Even if that communication ends up confirming, right, that these are terrible people and they're enemies and they mean us harm. Okay, well, now you know it. Now you've confirmed that information, and that narrows your set of options, and then you can take one of those options, including blowing the motherfucking shit up.
Yeah, I guess it's all about risk and gamble and what you consider a worthwhile gamble. If you think that acting soon without the full set of
just is sneezing up a storm over here. It's okay. It's a New Year's sneeze.
Do your thing, man. Is it a worthwhile gamble to if you act too soon, you have too many options, right? And you're just talking about you want to narrow down the options. Yeah. Is it a worthwhile gamble to choose one of those wide options if you think that something worse is going to happen? Or is it a worthwhile gamble to wait until your options narrow, in which case you'll have a more likely chance of making the correct decision, you know? So
And it's always like when you're playing a role-playing game or something, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the context that's been set up around it, because to make it more difficult, what they've done is they've made it so that the DMA is now doing that thing where it blips out of existence and then pops into existence somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So that complicates matters, because the argument you could have is, all right, let's get this bomb thing ready to go, but then what we'll do is we'll wait until it's about to actually hit a planet, because so far it's not really like just aiming at planets necessarily, right? It's floating through the space, and if it gets close enough to a planet, fucks it up, right? But that doesn't work as well because, you know, now it's jumping around, right? They've introduced that idea that it's jumping around, so it gives a little bit more weight and urgency to Book's argument.
So when they were saying that, when Tilly was saying about, you know, when the black holes, it's hard to observe a black hole, and that's why it snuck up on us. Do you remember that? And then that pissed people off on the internet and stuff, you know, because the argument was brought, it was like the black hole came and it like wiped out a bunch of people. And then Tilly was like, well, you know, black holes, if there's nothing around them, there's no way to observe them or whatever. So
it was a gravimetric anomaly. It's not a black hole.
Okay, gravimetric. Well, no, she specifically mentioned black holes. I think
it's like a black hole.
A young wormhole.
Okay. Point being,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Point being is, are they still?
You guys say singularity.
Are they still holding with that, or is the reason that it snuck up on them now because we know it jumps around, or are they?
I think it's because it don't got no tachyons.
Are they holding with their initial assertion that they didn't see it coming because there was nothing around it, so there was nothing to observe?
No, that's a good point.
Are they going with the fact that it jumped around, which they introduced in a later episode?
I presume retroactively they must realize
they retconned it
jumping around.
The Moth people, they brought up the idea that the they wanted to give the benefit of the doubt because the Discovery gave them the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is an interesting comparison, because that was a small skirmish. This is some 5-light-year-wide celestial monster warrior.
But that gets into that age-old debate about how flexible is a philosophical position.
Right.
And
like, should you commit genocide on the Borg by a super
precisely.
Weird mathematical...
Is it wrong or not? Yeah, is it wrong or not? So, yeah. Iborg... Yes or no, right? And that's a complex question. There's not an easy answer to that question. Some people are willing to be more flexible, or their sort of philosophical bandwidth scales up and down in relation to the seriousness of the problem. And Book makes that argument explicitly. He says, yeah, all that's well and good, except for this situation.
I mean,
and then you have to debate, well, is that for real or not? Like, does this situation change the context sufficiently that you are now allowed to do things that previously your own moral philosophy wouldn't permit you to do?
I mean, I don't think there's a blanket answer you can really give, but the question remains is, when is it okay to change it? Yeah. And is there an exact point?
Some people will have a for sure answer, but that doesn't mean that's the only answer. There's a whole variety of answers that could be given. And that's, again, on different scales, that debate plays out in every country around the world, many communities, even, you know, when it comes to law enforcement and all sorts of other issues, this comes up, right? What do you do? What is the solution to this perceived problem?
What do you do?
Is the problem even a problem? And that's why I think
Morpheus, what do you do?
I think it's important that they have this discussion.
It's my Keanu Reeves.
Yes, I got
and
that.
Speed and Matrix.
Yes, blended together.
Yeah.
But having this discussion, about whether, you know, where does this, how are you perceiving this problem? Because if you assume the problem to be like the Earth people and book, who just state, we don't fucking care. Like, they killed a bunch of people. We're scared they're going to kill more. So we couldn't care less. We're going to do whatever we can to
stop
it.
And a lot of it is based particularly around Book and his own guilt, too, is the other thing that comes into
but
play.
But it's important that he's not the only one who thinks that, because for him, it would be easy to be like, yeah, dude, you can think that all you want, because we would probably think the exact same thing in your situation. However, the Earth people think that. I think some of the Ferengi, you know, there's a bunch of people, even some of the United Federation of Planets people vote in favor of Book's plan, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying Book's target. But maybe they have different intentions for why they vote for
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's important to note that you don't.
Intentions.
You don't need to be coming from a specific perspective to agree with that viewpoint. Mm-hmm. There are a whole host of reasons.
Yeah.
And it's the classic situation where, I mean, some of these people might even argue over what the justification is, even though they have the same position, right? Mm-hmm. They might quibble with each other about why they're justifying that position. They have different reasons for justifying that position, but they all share that particular position, right?
So isolytic explosion is the way to go.
Isolytic explosion.
I felt like the weapon that Tarka made that looked kind of like Zora's kill switch. Did you know they kind of look similar? They kind of look similar.
I didn't think of that.
They kind of look similar. He was talking about jumping in with less than
similar architecture. I think it's just the product of the time.
The programmable matter. Mm-hmm. Something.
Programmable matter.
Something like that.
He was talking about how you go in and in less than he's like Discovery can jump in, drop it, and jump out. And he says, less than 5 seconds to do so. And then people all start mumbling, going like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then you hear one guy go, decisive.
I do love the chitter chattering in the background.
Simpsons always makes.
Somebody should have been like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Simpsons would always make fun of that kind of thing. It's like, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
don't forget
listen.
The thing. Yeah, let's not listen.
But it is fascinating that this episode is so talky, but it feels like a lot happens, right? Somehow.
Yeah, I liked last week's episode. I this one is so different. Last week was kind of its own thing, but
did
I
you
really
like it?
Last week's more action-y style, more tension.
I enjoyed this episode more than last week's episode. I thought it was
and a lot of that goes to the conclusion, the cliffhanger, which again, an improvement over previous seasons. They're being able to do that thing that Star Trek used to be very good at and is hopefully getting better at, which is blending the serious and the tense with little bits of humor, little bits of not necessarily even humor, you know, just sort of little lifey bits, like in this case where Burnham's trying to go talk to Book. He's not in her quarters. She sees Grudge and reads the note from Book and then asks the computer where Book is. And then she does the instant transport only to see Book fly away. And then boom, clearly using the spore drive in his ship. And there's that great little moment where she walks in the room and she's like, Zora, where's, she's like, Grudge?
Grudge is 5 meters from your location.
Which
that was funny.
It's funny. It's in the middle of a serious denouement to this episode. And it's both funny inherently just because of the setup and also because it relates to people in our contemporary day and time when we're using Google Home and Alexa and stuff. And that sort of mix up happens all the time.
And it's funny because when you look back at TNG, that mix-up never happened in TNG. Somehow the computer always kind of knew like who was... And so it's kind of funny that they're approaching it.
It was like a fantasy element back then, the idea of talking to a computer.
But now it's funny. Now it seems more realistic and more probable. They have those we can find, figure out what, you know, some of the, not the downfalls, but, you know, the weaknesses or whatever. You know, I'm thinking about it, and actually I need to watch this season again. I really would like to watch this season again front to back after it's all over. Mm-hmm. Cause now
or back to front, you can watch the episodes in reverse order.
I might sometimes rewatch this first half while we're waiting for the second.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea, actually. I think I'll do that too, because I mentioned that I enjoyed this episode more than last week's, but now I'm really thinking about, I don't know, because this episode in certain ways was kind of heavy handed and about the philosophical ideas it was approaching, like all the Zora stuff, like. You could say that, like, oh, you know, that's just some floofity doofity, whatever.
Floofity doofity.
And I can understand why people might think it's cheesy and corny or whatever, but I actually really, I kind of enjoyed the Zora stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I know it's like taking this idea of, like, well, what is life? And it's like, after a certain
point. What is love?
Well, after a certain point.
Baby, don't hurt me.
Don't hurt me.
After a certain.
Don't hurt me.
No more.
After a certain point of you talking about this what is life concept, sometimes it can start to feel like, okay. But, you know, I think back in TNG, never was afraid to have those discussions with Data. So maybe
Data and with other things as well, like the exocomps.
And maybe that's why I liked it, even though it seemed like, a little heavy at times.
How about this? Why don't we take another break, and then we will wrap up the show talking all about Zora. Zora the living computer.
Zora the explorer.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. As promised, we're going to be talking about Zora.
As promised. They call that a teaser.
We promised you. So, what'd you think about Zora?
I promised. Why did she... So, she had these coordinates, and they were talking about... They were like, well, where's Zora? She's been working, trying to cross-reference with the sphere data for a week now. You know, I think we got to move on to something else. And all of a sudden, she's like, oh, I'll have it ready in a second. You notice that? Like,
there was a coincidence.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering. Do you think it was a coincidence, or do you think she was just being unruly? It was
she
like
might have been recalcitrant.
Was it foreshadowing her, like, refusal to give the coordinates?
That.
Do you think she was stalling?
Or
do you think it was, or do you think she just coincidentally, like, had it ready the second he was wondering where they were?
I could purchase that on Amazon.com. I could purchase that.
For a dollar?
When they said that there was
a reasonable market rate,
when they were talking about there was 140,
I'd buy that for the reasonable market rate.
There was 147 locations, potential locations for species 10C that were 100 parsecs wide, and Adira looked all super annoyed. she had this really pissed off, annoyed look.
I'm sorry.
God damn it.
All right, we're getting better.
I'm starting to feel really bad about that.
Of course. That's good. That's step one.
They're going to find where you live, and they're going to come and beat you.
Yeah. But this is a great use of Adira, and as well as Gray, the whole storyline, it all comes together very well. I love both of these characters. I think that early on in the season, as we've again mentioned in previous episodes of the podcast, their storyline seems a little bit awkwardly squished into the plot.
Yeah.
I like the content of it, but it's been difficult. But that's done now. Once Gray got his body, that sort of closed down that storyline, and I've loved everything since. I've loved Gray trying to find a place for himself on the ship and ultimately failing because he really wants to be a Trill Guardian, and he wants to go do the training for that.
And I mean, and after all after all that's done with, after Gray leaves, theoretically, that's what I'm led to believe at this point. You kind of look back though and wonder what was their whole intention with that. Were they coming up with it as they went along, or was, you know, do you think that's
Discovery is just making it up as they go along?
I'm not entirely sure.
I think they wanted to hit certain beats.
But like you said, it was awkward. Certain parts of it were kind of awkwardly integrated.
And it also took away from Adira, one of their best traits is their capability. And their capability of helping solve problems. And there's been a little bit of that in this season, but this episode was an example where, not super overt, right? But Adira is able to help solve the problem here. And they are basically stating that when they're having that conversation with Gray, Gray is saying, you should come with me. And Adira is like, no, this is my home. This is where I can be useful. Right. And they've demonstrated that in this episode, which shores up that argument. Character wise, we understand very clearly why this would be the case. Right. Why Adira would want to stay. We also understand very clearly why Gray would want to go, because not only does he have this dream of being a Trill Guardian, they've done the work over the past few episodes to show that Gray enjoys being on the Discovery, is accepted on the Discovery, but at the same time, it's not Gray's home. Gray does not have as much of a purpose as everybody else. And they illustrated that well in the last episode when everyone left the bar.
And I thought it was a little forward. Not maybe not forward's not the right word. And I know it's actually very nice, but I thought it was interesting when Culber was telling Gray, I expect regular updates, yeah. You know? It's like they haven't known each other that long. Well,
they're like a family. There's time that's happened.
I know, that's why it's okay, because, like, you know,
Culber and Stamets are the daddies.
Yeah, yes, well, they're the daddies of Adira, and through proxy by Gray as well, but the truth is they don't know Gray that well, you know? Gray is...
because Gray just popped out of Adira's mind.
Yeah, I know. And then recently. And it's all very understandable, and it's very loving, and it's great that they're accepting. So I'm not really complaining, but I thought I might feel a little weird if someone said that to me, having just met them.
The other thing is from the writing perspective, the dramatic perspective, one of the beats they wanted to hit, which I think was an important beat to hit, perhaps inelegantly incorporated into the plot for this year, was Gray getting his own body and having some agency over that body, right? That body's construction, how it looks. And that is an analogy to being a trans person and having the ability to have some agency over your own body. And they have another example of that in this episode, which was brilliant, brought a tear to my eye, was when Kovich declares Zora a life form versus an advanced AI.
Yeah.
And Zora says it's good, you know, basically it's good to be seen.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
It's good. That's representation for anybody who's been marginalized in any way. Mm-hmm. To have your existence recognized is important, to be set equal to other people that you feel you are equal
to. It's a seemingly open-ended statement, but that it holds so much meaning to it. And I thought that was pretty important. Just the idea of being seen. It's just...
That was elegantly presented. Yeah. The whole Zora thing has been interesting. I know that some people have had some, I think, fair complaints due to the pace of the show in terms of, like, why, you know, last week people were saying, like, why aren't they, where they should be taking Zora out of the computer. Starfleet security sucks balls. It's like, now this episode, they spent the entire episode talking about that exact issue and resolving it in a very Star Trek way. It's been interesting to see some of the commentary on the Zora stuff, because people saying, like, well, they should have known earlier that Zora was shady. And again, that's partly because of the pacing and the plotting of the series. But the point we've arrived at, I think, is a really interesting point, because it's the beginning of storytelling opportunities. It's not closing it down. Like, now we've declared Zora is a life form. She's going to stay in the ship in one fashion or another. And then this whole thing with Stamets being resolved, as we were alluding to earlier, in such an, again, elegant way, right? Where he problem solves, they problem solve together, and comes up with this idea of having Zora join Starfleet.
Yeah. I want to mention that previously I was talking about how I thought Zora was going to get, like, her own body, right? And it seems like they kind of quelled that. Culber goes, if you did this, referring to the extraction, he says, could Zora choose her new form? And Kovich said, certainly.
Yeah.
So
fuck yeah.
So at that point, I thought, she is going to get a new body. But they kind of made it clear that she's not. She would rather, because apparently.
She said, this ship is my body.
She's like, she apparently would rather die than leave her ship form with that kill switch. But I was wondering, why did they even bother, though, saying that she could get to choose her own form if they weren't going to go in that direction anyway?
They were explaining, they had to make it clear up front that the philosophical debate was not between keeping Zora on the ship and murdering Zora.
Yeah, okay.
It was, we're totally, Zora will be removed from the ship. That will be safer for the ship. And Zora will be totally able to control whatever she wants to control, just not a starship. Right. With
not a Starfleet vessel.
Right?
I thought it was interesting that
Zora is the one who introduced the idea of rather dying. Yeah. And that is more impactful because nobody wants to kill Zora from the get-go.
But Stamets was like okay with that decision as a fail-safe.
It was something that he could move on with.
And it was something he could control. Because, no pun intended, he was worried about having no control over Zora. Because of control.
When Culber goes, in the past, we were unable to remove the sphere data when they were talking about extracting Zora. And then I thought it was funny, Kovich pointed out, he's like, technology has come a long way in 930 years. It's like, yeah. But apparently their views of anomalies haven't, because they still, back to what I was talking to before about how
they couldn't
see anomalies coming because there's nothing around them. You'd think in 900 years they would have figured out that whole direct observation issue.
You'd think, but
they have solved the technology. 900 years, goddamn, 900. Yeah, shit tons happened. They have fucking programmable matter, man.
One other problem they haven't solved.
I liked how the device that Tarka made at the end, and it all slurped
into the control.
That's
all you have to do to upload something. You just put it in there.
Yeah, and updated it, so now it's got like new control forms and stuff. That's kind of badass. Anyway,
and in the future we'll laugh at it because it would be like, haha, we thought programmable matter would look all like boxy.
Yeah, right.
It's actually all looks like it's Minecraft. It's all slimy.
What do they call those units in Minecraft? Oh, there's
use of unit. Well, while you're looking that up, I was going to say the other problem that they haven't solved in the future is junior officers and their friends barging into a senior staff meeting.
Oh yeah, right. Zora, we're here to help Zora.
Oh yeah.
Which again does not bother me one bit. This is nothing new to Star Trek. Wesley's just walking onto the bridge.
It's very much in the spirit.
It is hilarious because it does aggravate a lot of people. And honestly, no offense to people who are aggravated by that, because you are fully justified in being aggravated by the hilarious lack of security throughout the history of Starfleet.
Yeah.
Anyone
can waltz onto the bridge when they want to as well.
But it's a TV show. Yeah.
It's a TV show. Even up to the point where you
can transport anywhere you want to. But just something that's pinned to your chest.
Yeah, you'd think they'd have some kind of like laser shield that would prevent that or something.
Adira and Gray.
Like you don't have clearance to go to the fucking bridge because you just popped out of somebody's brain week or something.
Adira and Gray were like Merry and Pippin in Lord of the Rings and the Council of Elrond. They're all like, we're coming in. We're gonna impact like these events as well.
We're gonna say something about this thing.
Oh, I can't find that term of like when things are created through cubes. They used it. I think that's what they used for Minecraft.
Tessellation?
No, it's an actual term for building based on the idea of cube.
Cube-based building?
Cube-based building or something. I don't know where it originated.
This is going to aggravate you.
This is going to aggravate the rest of the
episode. We don't have that much time left in the episode.
Yeah, I know. Okay, well, I guess...
You're going to be all distracted.
Okay, well, I'll worry about it later.
No, it's entertaining.
It'll be a cliffhanger for next week.
You won't remember.
Next week's pickles.
Everyone kept saying sentience, which I know is a proper pronunciation, but it is one of the proper
pronunciations.
I always said sentience. I've never said sentience.
I tend to say sentient.
Yeah.
Some people say sentient, and both are fine. Both also don't necessarily mean what people think they mean. Often they actually mean sapient. As opposed to sentient.
Does anybody say pronunciations?
Pronunciations.
I do. pronunciations and pronunciations. I say pronunciations, but
so,
yeah, most people do.
But if you're but a sentient really just means a certain feedback self-awareness, whereas sapient is what we think of when we think of human sort of consciousness.
So
I could have that entirely wrong, but I don't think so.
So I was wondering...
Take a bet, audience.
I don't know, and this... I don't know exactly the definition...
You don't know, but you've been told.
That penis time is really old.
Penis time.
That works in the meter.
So I wasn't sure about this. When they were talking about... You know, they established early in the episode, she's sentient. We know she's sentient. Okay, that's what they were talking about. But then later on, they were all super surprised when she changed her core programming. When she was like, her core programming was to care for the crew of the Discovery. Yeah. And they're like, we didn't program that into her. And she's like, I changed my core programming. Now, if she's sentient or sapient or whatever, should it be a surprise that she changed her core programming?
I can see it being a surprise.
Because I guess when you think about us, like, can we change our core programming? I don't know.
No.
Well, through a lot of counseling, perhaps.
Or drugs.
Yeah. That's a question, though. Like, that. Well, then that means
that
it's possible.
Salvia.
I do think
salvia
you can
do it.
I do think you can change your core. I do think you can change your core processing if you're going to use that analogy for human consciousness. Certainly, I think it's possible. But
I mean, sentience is really a comparison. It's supposed to meant to like relate to humans. That's like basically
sentence?
No sentience. When it,
that's
when it,
how they're using.
Like
that's
how. Well, that's how. When you say a sentence,
That's why. Whenever conscious. Whenever sci-fi stuff,
self-aware,
and whenever sci-fi stuff talks about sentience, it's in the context of how of relating to humanity, and that's what the big dilemma is.
Even if they really mean sapient, we know what they mean.
Yeah,
but I.
But so should it be a surprise that she was able to change her core program? If she's
sentient? I think it's a surprise in the context of, is this just an advanced AI or is this something that has grown beyond that?
By the
fact that Zora can do this is part of the evidence.
I mean, can you
that
say,
she's gone beyond?
Can you say an advanced AI is sentient? I mean,
well, that is again an age old question, which is how
how
can you ever tell if a computer has feelings? That's question number one. But then the immediate question is well, how can you tell if other human beings have feelings?
Right. So
they may not.
That's how many sentences?
How can you tell if
in
you,
a sentence?
If
do you,
you
need
have,
to make a paragraph?
You have
is it three sentences?
A pierogi wrath. Pierogi wrath.
Pierogi wrath.
I have felt some pierogi wrath last night.
You're making me hungry.
A paragraph can be one
a paragraph,
word.
A paragraph, the most
word.
Ingenious
it
paragraph.
One word. Because especially if it's a quotation, then you have to start a new paragraph.
Yeah. So Data, we've decided Data is a new as a life form, right? Haven't they established that Data is a life form at some point?
He's fully functional.
They were talking about, because there was that episode where they wanted to dismantle Data and
Measure of a Man.
Yeah, yeah. And
classic episode.
So, but then the Qualcomms. What did they decide that? That there's
a new British show hosted by Jimmy Carr called I Literally Just Told You. And the gimmick of this game show is that the contestants are asked questions about stuff that has already happened on the show. And sorry, that just it's a little plug for that show. It was
Is that a real show?
It's a real show.
Oh, I thought you were making a joke.
It's a brand new show.
I was Jimmy Carr. That's a really weird, reference to.
So he hosts, 8 out of 10 cats does countdown. So he's
I'm aware of him.
Yeah, yeah. Tax Evader. He's often making fun of the Tax Evader. But anyway, so, you made me think of that because we just said Exocomps and you still didn't get it out.
I know it's a weakness that I have, and I'm very sensitive about it. So
we shouldn't rub it.
That you not bring that up.
We shouldn't needle you about your exocompatibility.
Exocompatibility.
Exo non-compatibility.
So did we decide that exocomps are they're self-aware, are they sentient, and are they a life form? What did we decide about exocomps?
We or Star Trek?
Nacho comps.
What?
That's nacho comps.
Nacho comps. Well, it gets the other thing, and we are again, as we are often want to say, not qualified fully qualified to have these give these debates their due. But the other issue when it comes to
there was I mentioned the Short Trek episode where the dot made a relationship. Is the what how is
we're
the dot dipping, fit in all that
what
and
about
the
spots
and the dot
we're
the
dipping,
dots,
dipping dots
and the dot screamed when it was eaten by the boy.
Oh my god.
That was horrifying. But the point being that in discussions of these things you also have it's not a binary, there's also a spectrum.
Well, that's of course always what it ends up
and
being.
We don't know enough about human consciousness,
and this goes back to what you were bringing up about the point of philosophical questions. Does the answer change based on scale? Meaning, like when the butterfly people were attacked, they of course Discovery gave them the benefit of the doubt because it's like, oh, it's a misunderstanding. I know it's dangerous; someone could have died, but it's not that big of a deal. Versus this giant celestial body that's ripping people to shreds. Can you extend that same philosophy up in scale, or is it a yes or no all the way through?
The real world example that most people out there will be familiar with in their daily lives is the general conceit that it's okay.
I am general conceit.
Yes.
I am corporal care.
That taking antibiotics and genociding a bunch of bacteria in your body is fine.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks they have nervous systems and pain. On the other side of it, you have humans and dogs and cats and things like that, where people would be horrified if you're actively torturing these animals. But in between, I mean, and
yeah, I mean,
I'm not trying to rank.
I mean, the most basic thing is you can eat a cute bunny, but you can't eat a cute cat, right?
Yeah, that or how much pain do lobsters feel? Do they feel pain, or are they just reacting as machines?
I'm starting to get bummed out by lobsters.
Well, viruses aren't alive.
These are difficult questions to answer, and you know, you might bias yourself to being like, you know what, I'm kind of assume that they do feel pain and try not to inflict pain.
Well, tardigrades are alive, right?
But they're so small.
Totally.
They're tiny little.
One of the questions when it comes, I mean, often it comes up specifically with pain, but you could use it for anything, for emotion, love, hate, desire, whatever. The idea being, what level of complexity do you have to have? And this applies to Zora as well. What level of complexity do you have to have in your mind? What level of memory retention? What sorts of inputs and outputs, and how are they processed? How are they stored? What combination of these things results in a being that can suffer versus a being that cannot suffer in the conceptual way that we think of?
And the question of spectrum, like, it applies, like I was saying, to the philosophical question of the butterfly people attacking versus the giant celestial body attacking. Do you change your philosophy based on a scale, or is it consistent regardless of if it's a small group of people or if it's killing a bunch of people?
And
if it isn't, at what point is the exact moment of change? And that's where people disagree.
Further complicate your example with the butterfly people, it was an actual specific conflict. They were communicating and they had a conflict. But that
was based upon like some linguistical
misunderstanding. It was a butterfly effect.
It was a conflict. Whereas with the DMA, we don't know yet that it's a conflict. That's Burnham's whole point, is that this could just be an incidental, thing.
Well, that's a second point, yeah.
Right? So that further complicates that. It's hard to answer these questions. It's also fun to debate these questions as long as people can do so with relative congeniality and peacefulness.
Yeah, it's a bummer when people decide that they have to be right and then start wars over and shit.
But I'm very much looking forward to see where they go with this Zora business as things proceed. I think they've opened up a lot of opportunities for themselves. And as I suggested,
with the
whole DMA thing and other the potential for race species from other galaxies and all that
species,
it's exciting to think that they've been laying the groundwork in the writing, in the plotting, to open up new story possibilities to jump off from, as opposed to really relying on old, you know, looking at old story possibilities or looking in between the lines of historical events. Jumping to the future has been really quite beneficial, I think.
Because you never know where Discovery is going to go. Like, they're always going to do this or that. You're like, well, I didn't see that one coming.
I like most of the Zora stuff. The thing about when they were testing, there was an optical translator cluster that didn't share any known syntax, which ended up being her subconscious, which meant she could dream.
Yeah.
That part was a little like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't feel strongly enough to have a serious opinion, but I was a little like, okay, I guess, you know, I'm just like, okay, whatever.
They just wanted an excuse to show clip reels from previous seasons.
Right.
Previously on Star Trek Discovery.
That's what it felt like. It's like, oh, we're getting a little mini clip show right now.
Sphere data.
Which mirrors in some way the tree, you know, the screen grabs of people's faces from various episodes.
Right. Stamets, when he was talking, he was saying trust is a choice. I don't know if trust is really a choice.
I think trust is a choice.
I don't know. If you don't trust someone, you just don't trust someone. And that's based upon their actions.
But that's a choice.
I don't know. I don't know that it is. I mean, yes, certain aspects could be. It's a choice in the sense that I can work on my mistrust and try to like work my brain around it and better myself and become more trusting if I think that's what the situation deserves. But at the same time, there is some what's agency on the other person too. If the other person's a bunch of shit that makes them not trustworthy, there's a part of you that just feels that.
But no, you're right. Except in this particular context, and I think you make a good point that maybe this phrase does not apply universally. In this context, though, Zora's only threats so far have been to withhold information that she thinks or asserts will harm the crew. Mm-hmm. And that's not great. Stamets makes a very good point about the chain of command and all that. And he's able to convince Zora.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But Zora hasn't actually done anything evil. So that's where the trust being a choice thing, because there's not enough information.
I think
it's like meeting a new person.
Well, I think there's a choice in giving somebody a chance to explain themselves. But I don't say that's not the same as trusting someone. Basically, I'm saying I will give you the chance to convince me and maybe I'll start trusting you, but I can't guarantee that I'm just going to magically trust you.
This is in the context of him trying to say, look, if you want me to trust you, you have to trust me. He's making the argument that it is a transactional thing. And that as a transaction, that's where Zora now, he's giving Zora the choice. He's saying, look, you can either say we're chumps and you're saying you're looking out for our best interest, but you don't trust us to have input into our best interest, or you can trust that we know what we're doing.
And that's kind of what I was saying with about there's steps you can take to gain trust with people. But there's some things that I don't know that are necessarily fully within control.
You'd have to imagine a scenario where you are meeting another person.
You
don't have enough information about that person to know whether or not they are an enemy or a friend. And because of the surrounding context, you have the option of either allying with them or not.
Well, yes,
and
definitely.
Then you have to make some. Well, that's where the choice is. You can still choose not to trust, by the way.
Oh no, you can. You're right. And
you can decide. You know what? The information I have here, I'm not risking.
And honestly, and I never disputed that. Of course, that's. And I'm saying that I don't know if that's trusting someone. That's simply giving somebody an opportunity. That's all that is. There's a difference between trusting someone and giving them an opportunity to give you their trust.
So you're more of a trust but verify kind of guy.
Well, I don't know what I am, but you know, I'm just saying sometimes sometimes I wish I believed in certain things that I don't believe. Like sometimes, you know, it would be nice to believe that there's this great afterlife where all this wonderful shit happens, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes,
or that Smurfs are real.
Yeah, I would love to believe that Smurfs are real.
Except they're three apples high, which is way bigger.
That's way too big.
Yeah, that's way too big.
I mean, you know,
it's like if you step on one, that's like it's such a mess.
I think that my life would be better if I believed that Smurfs, if I believed in Smurfs, but I don't believe in Smurfs, and then there's no amount that can convince me to believe in a Smurf.
What about Snorks?
Fuck Snorks.
I know, Snorks are they're getting boners all the time. With
yeah, right.
Little head boners.
And so I think there's some aspects of trust that mirror that kind of thing. But you're right, though. It's if you're approaching somebody and you don't know them, you can choose to indulge in your fear. Yeah. You can choose to indulge in fear. And that's different.
Because the scenario you gave, for example, like let's flip it around. Let's say somebody gives you every reason to trust them. You can still choose not to. And some people make that. Oftentimes it's a mistake not to do that, you know, because they're just not willing to accept that they have some issue going on, that they're like, I'm just not going to trust you.
And you can make, and you can commit.
And I only mean mistake in the context of sometimes that it can impact your quality of life if you're incapable of actually bringing yourself to trust people.
You can engage in acts of trust without actually feeling that trust, though. And is that considered trust? It's like, I am trusting you that you will deliver this package. In your head, you're like...
Deliver the package!
In your head, you can be like, I don't trust that they're actually going to deliver this package. But you're like, I trust you, deliver the package. You're giving them the opportunity. But you think they're going to fuck it up. Like, is that trust? I don't know.
I think it is. I think if you're going to... Because I think if you didn't trust them... At some level, even if you don't have confidence in that trust, I honestly think you would just say like, oh no. The rational thing would be like, oh no, no, I'm not going to give you this thing because why would I? I don't trust you. Like trust is going, in some cases, trust is going against your better judgment. You're like, I don't know.
Like mail in something.
Yeah. I mean, you just imagine all the scenarios that guy, he gave me a chance and now I'm a superstar.
I think in a lot of ways we're on the same page here. I think I'm choosing.
I owe it all.
We're all being philosophical because it's the new year.
Because it's the new year.
It's 2022.
I think I'm just being pedantic or something. I don't know.
Pedantic and semantic. That's Dan.
Oh, is it pedantic or semantic?
It's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
Semantic.
Yeah. All right. Let's close things up. Any
semaphore
last
versus pedophile.
Major points, any odds and ends about this particular episode, and then we'll give a brief overview of what's coming next week. Got a special thing coming for you next week.
When Stamets,
so stay tuned.
I like when Stamets.
You're going to be excited.
When Stamets goes, I feel good about today. It's tomorrow that worries me. That's a common fear that people have, you know. And you know, he's very honest about his fears.
He wants What's the term? Contingency?
It's a classic Stamets enthusiasm, nervousness.
So enthusiasm.
So wouldn't it have been funny if in his nervousness when Zora was like, I can't dismantle this kill switch because that wouldn't be a very good kill switch, and Stamets goes, I'll get it. What if he accidentally
pushed it?
Oh shit.
Because I mean, I was like, wait a minute, what's he gonna do?
Yeah,
like, oh, he just went like,
took yeah. that apart.
How would you react in that situation? Would you be super bummed, or would you just be like, oh well, you know, like
problem solved.
Yeah,
I guess I don't have to choose to trust nobody today.
Sphere data.
Yeah. Sphere data. I mean, you really
for real. All right. What else we got here?
Some more shots of Tilly. There were more shots of Tilly when in Zora's subconscious.
Subconscious Tilly. Kovic was great.
Yes, Kovic is always pretty good.
I've commented before, there's been a couple scenes with Kovic that have been a little awkward, and I'm pretty sure when you watch those scenes, he filmed that like not with the other actors, probably COVID-related limitations. But in this scene, he's great. One of my favorite ones is when Zora makes that revelation about like, I'm the one who changed my programming. And they all are looking at the camera, like, which is like where Zora is.
Yeah.
And Kovic sort of turns his face last and just sort of like, the look on his face is just really good. David Cronenberg doing a great job here.
Stamets says to Saru, I know you. I know your values. And there are disciplinary measures if you step out of line. That's what the failsafe gives us, basically, mm-hmm. saying is that's disciplinary measures. But then Culber makes a very relevant statement of saying discipline, not death.
Yes.
And I think that's very relevant. Yes. You know, there's a difference because a lot of people want to say like, oh, they had it coming, you know. Oh, well, they knew the rules and they broke the rules.
It's those people are assholes. Those are the people who think it's okay to shoot somebody in the back because they steal your TV.
Yeah, right.
There's no death sentence for stealing a TV.
Right, yeah, right.
It's great. Just go get a new TV.
Yeah.
Your homeowner's insurance will pay for that. Yeah,
I'm sure they'd have a different philosophical argument for that, but
they would be soundly defeated.
Soundly
defeated.
Why don't you read a book instead?
Yeah.
Nobody's really. Going to steal a book.
That's a good point. That's America. I'm not supposed to fear anything.
All right. Odds and ends. Booms and blams.
Booms and blams.
Plims and plumes.
Saru and Trina were adorable at the end.
Yeah.
Do you think
succulent heroes?
He gave her a succulent. Do you think that was a way of him telling Trina that her Kelpian tea sucked?
No.
Because he was saying, he's like, the gel from the succulent flower is what gives the tea its distinctive taste.
I love your perspective. You so often come up with the angles like, is this person being a total piece of shit?
He's just continuing the dance.
Is this sweet? I can't trust this. It was sweet. This sweet exchange between these people.
He was basically saying, if you're going to make What's me tea, I appreciate you giving me tea, but if you're going to do it, I really don't want to have to stomach that bullshit you made.
He was stressing the syllables.
You think Vulcans don't know how to make fucking tea? This is how you make tea.
Succulent. Yeah,
succulents.
No, it was
good in your
desert,
in your dry desert, and a succulent.
It's funny, the relationship is becoming more adorable, which I'm hesitant to say. You know, these adults are adorable, but you can't help but
adults
think
can
it's
be
good.
Adorable.
Yeah,
it's even more adorable when adults are adorable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got a thing though. Like when people, you know, online, when people online see a picture of an old couple and one of them gives the other flowers.
Oh, not old people. Old people aren't adorable.
No. What I mean to say is that. What I mean to say is when people talk about an old couple loving each other and they're like, oh, that's so cute. It's like, it's awesome. But I don't know. Cute seems condescending. When you say that's cute about like someone who's in a strong relationship.
No. I think
it's treating them like they're children.
Yeah, but sometimes it's cute. Sometimes they're
actually Vulcans are cute.
Man. I just think that in a way it can be disrespectful to say someone's being cute.
Sure. Sure. Yes, in some context.
But Tarina and Saru are cute.
They're very cute.
Yeah.
They're adorable. All right. Odds and ends.
Anyone else?
That's it.
Remaining odds and ends?
No.
Going once?
When a deer...
Going twice?
Did you notice? Speaking of...
going sold three.
Oh, no, no! No! Speaking of end credit music, when a deer goes like an entirely new life form.
They played the beginning of the end credit.
Oh, yeah,
but they didn't play the Celtic. Most people agreed.
Do you think it's Celtic?
Yeah, we did a poll on Twitter.
I know we did a Celtic or a poll.
Well, we did
a Celtic.
We did a. hey, you guys want to do some Celtic later?
Yeah.
Bring in the new year. On Twitter, we did a poll
right.
asking what people thought it sounded like.
People said jaunty. I don't remember them saying Celtic. Did they?
I said jaunty.
Someone else said jaunty about, in response to you.
It was Last of the Mohicans, Outlander.
Oh, right. That's right.
Other. And the other option was, what are you guys on about? And the ones that got the most votes were Last of the Mohicans and What Are You Guys On About?
Of course.
Because people didn't listen to the clip.
Lazies.
All right. okay. Does that do it for the odds and ends? Can we go into the our special fun time edition for next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's
really play it up.
Saru says something about intentions too, in reference to Zora.
Saru's got a whole.
Zora's never expressed anything other than the best intentions.
Succulent.
They keep talking about intentions in this episode.
He's
That's like
kelp,
a theme.
This guy. Kelp.
Get one of those. He wears the slacks and gets the. When you sit down, you get the intention.
We don't.
You know the penis thing.
Yeah.
It looks like you have a boner.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't have a boner.
The tent.
Intent of boners.
Yes, oh. It's like it's a tenting. It's a tenting
of
the fly.
Oh,
intention.
It's like the fire at
it's
the
tension
is
in
it
your
like,
crotch.
Is it like the fire at the circus? It was intense.
Yeah. Precisely.
Yeah.
You said you didn't have any odds and ends left, but you keep reading stuff. You keep saying like and like you're gonna say something.
Well,
I mean, you're free to.
Do you have anything?
We were talking about something and I forgot.
Oh man.
All right. Okay. So, real quick, you can communicate with us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Website is itsgotstartrek.com. Twitter is @itsgotstartrek. Instagram is @itsgotstartrek. Facebook, @itsgotstartrek. YouTube, @itsgotstartrek. @itsgotstartrek on Google.
Oh my God. How many times are you going to say that?
All sorts of @itsgotstartrek. That's how you can find us.
Oh, I remember what I was saying. One thing I wanted to say is Kovic.
COVID.
When he had that floating hollow keyboard.
It's
like,
got COVID.
That seems those hollow keyboards that he was poking on. That seems like it'd be even harder to work with than those virtual buttons on the flat surface in TNG.
Of course it would be.
But maybe there's some haptic feedback. But still, it just he was look. I don't know. You never get good at that shit.
Yeah, some of the shit's not gonna. Nobody's gonna like it. Like the hologram talking to each other. They tried that on Deep Space Nine. They tried. They keep trying to do that.
It's
never that good.
And look, we've had.
Now they're doing it now.
We've had keyboards on phones for a long time, and everyone still depends on autocorrect. They complain about it because autocorrect fucks your shit up. But
man,
if there was no autocorrect, it would still
duck you, man. Duck you.
You know, so people still can't. I just don't think it's natural for people. It's not natural.
Goddamn.
I got rid of the autocorrect, but still, my big fucking fingers like push the wrong.
That's what I'm saying.
Thing.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is I don't think. That our bodies are made for that.
It's
maybe
like, it's
maybe
like I'm trying to put a B in, but it comes out a V.
All right. Well,
maybe that'll be a form of natural selection where the people who aren't able to type without autocorrect will die.
Yeah. you all use your big beefy fingers to write us in on Twitter or email or whatever.
Oh,
you want to do.
I also wanted to mention that. Oh, last thing is that when they're talking about the coordinates and then some numbers appear on the screen and Gray goes, "What are those?"
Yeah,
and Sam is just like, "The coordinates."
He doesn't know about this.
And then
stuff.
Kovic just looks at the coordinates and he's like, and then nobody says, "That's the motherfucker right there."
Right? Yeah, exactly. They didn't need to have someone ask the question of like, "What are those?" I think it was implied what they were. All they had to do was say like, "Thank you for the coordinates" or something like that. They didn't have to be like, "What are those?" You know, it's like you were just talking about them and now you're wondering what they are.
What have we been trying to do this whole
time? Yeah.
Okay. Right. Next week, we are doing. We're going a little off topic. We're going to do an episode of It's Not Star Trek.
We're getting Brian.
It's not Star Trek.
You laughed at me.
It's got pickles.
It is
you
clever.
Thought it
it's
was.
It's got pickles.
I think It's Not Star Trek is pretty clever.
It's Not Star Trek is pretty goddamn clever. but yes, It's Got Pickles. We're going to do an episode devoted to pickles where we're going to eat a bunch of pickles. And make all sorts of crunchy sounds. Yeah, it's already in the can.
We did it months ago.
We listened to it. It's great. You're going to love it. So tune in for that. And then we'll do some more Star Trek after that, of course, leading into the...
we don't know what, though.
Yeah, we'll pick some good episodes.
There's so many Star Trek.
In the meantime, so stay tuned. Otherwise, we will be continuing our Discovery coverage.
Discovery.
February 12th. The show comes back February 10th, which means we will be releasing an episode on February 12th. So if you only want to listen to Discovery, just wait until
So you
wait
can
until
just
then.
Fuck off until then.
Yeah, but if you miss out on this pickle business... You're fucking yourself over. It's good shit.
It's good shit.
As the kids say.
Pickles is good.
It's
man.
Good snakeweed.
You remember when Stamets ran in, was trying to be all smooth and be like, "Hey, let's all huddle together."
Yeah,
and, like, and then the COVID just shut him down. I bet Stamets felt pretty dumb right now.
Yeah, about
that.
I'm sure
he's trying to be all.
He's
smooth.
Like, play music. I saw that in spy movies.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's like cancel music.
Okay, pickles next week.
Pickles next week. We eat so many pickles.
Have a good one. Happy New Year, and all the best to you and yours for a wonderful 2022. Sayonara.
Sayonara.
I don't know.
Sayonara, suckers.
Konnichiwa.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.